lava giribaradari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janna Balava Girivara Dari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana Jamuna Tira Banna Chari Jamuna Tira Banna Chari Jaya Ratta Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janna Balava Girivara Dari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana Jamuna Tira Banna Chari Hare Krishna Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada ki jaya Jaya Om Vishnu Pada Paramahansa Paravaja Kachara Asatara Sara Shishi Madhazara Prem Shri Kho, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita, Gadadhar, Shri Vasari Gaur, Bhaktamini Ki Jai. All glories to the Sama devotees. All glories to the Sama devotees. All glories to the Sama devotees. Glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. So we're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Draupadi's Lamentation, chapter, I believe it's 23. We'll be reading two texts, 30 and 31. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 30, we can just say it together. 30, right? Yeah, we can say it together. Atadarshe swam atmanam shrigvinam virjambaram virajam krita swasjayanam kanya birbahumanitam Translation. Then in a mirror she beheld her own reflection. Her body was completely freed from all dirt, and she was adorned with a garland, dressed in unsoiled robes and decorated with auspicious marks of tilak. She was served very respectfully by the maids. Text 31, please repeat. Snatam krita shirak snanam. Sarva barana bhushitam. Nishkagrivam balayinam. Kuja kanchananupuram. Snatam krita shirak snanam. Sarva barana bhushitam. Nishkagrivam balayinam. Kujat kanchananupuram. Please chant. Somebody. Snatam, bathed. Kritashiraha, including the head. Snanam, bathing. Sarva, all over. Abharana, with ornaments. Bhushitam, decorated. Nishka, a gold necklace with a locket. Grivam, on the neck. Balayinam, with bangles. Kujat, tinkling. Kanchana, made of gold. Nupuram, ankle bells. Translation. Her entire body, including her head, was completely bathed, and she was decorated all over with ornaments. She wore a special necklace with a locket. There were bangles on her wrists and tinkling anklets of gold about her ankles. Purport, as Srila Prabhupada. The word Krita Shirak Snanam appears here. According to the Smriti Shastra's directions for daily duties, ladies are allowed to bathe daily up to the neck. The hair on the head does not necessarily have to be washed daily because the mass of wet hair may cause a cold. For ladies, therefore, taking a bath up to the neck is ordinarily prescribed, and they take a full bath only on certain occasions. On this occasion, Devahuti took a full bath and washed her hair very nicely. When a lady takes an ordinary bath, it is called malasnana. And when she takes a full bath, including the head, it is called shiraksnana. At this time, she needs sufficient oil to smear on her head. That is the direction of the commentators of Shruti Shastras. Maam Vishnu Badaya Krishnamastaya Bhutaya Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinami Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaur Vanapachara Nishesha Shinyuadu Shachadashtra. Jai Shri Prabhupada. Jai Shri Mabhagatam gives us all kinds of information, how to take a bath, how to take care of our hair, all kinds of things. So this is, of course, Devahuti. She's been through her austerities. Now she's getting all gussied up with by 1,000 maidservants. And she happens to look in a mirror, which I guess were handy those days. And she could see that, oh, boy, I really have changed here. I remember a long time ago, Vyasasuno's first lecture. And it described how many hours someone takes in the bathroom in their lifetime. I had to look it up again because maybe it's changed. But anyway, it's like 1.5 to 2 years of your lifetime are spent in the bathroom. That's a lot of time. And I'm sure if you have a mirror in there and you're a lady, it takes a lot longer. And you probably 2-3 years of your lifetime is in there. Because you're always looking in there thinking, oh, if this was just this way and that was that color and this was just a little higher, that was just a little lower, then I'd be a lot better off. I'd be a lot happier. Only if. So Krishna, if he hears this, better watch out, because he might think, oh, you need a new model, you need a new make, all right, next lifetime we'll make those arrangements. So be careful, ladies. Don't be, or I'm into a little mustache here, or maybe I'll do a full beard. No, maybe I'll have sideburns. You know, so we should be careful about looking into this mirror. But when we do look into the mirror, we should see that we should have tilak on. Prabhupada made this comment. Here it said that she had different kinds of tilak. I guess there's, I know only of a few, but anyway, the Vaishnav tilak is what Prabhupada suggested we wear. And he said that if we didn't have it on, he commented, it says, you look like a crematorium. In other words, there's no life in you. You don't have your identity. You aren't showing that you're a Vaishnav. And we should be proud to wear tilak, nice, bright tilak. And I was in Sri Rangam one time, and we're looking for a certain person who was invited us to their home, and somehow or other we got the wrong house. It was across the street. But the people there are so great, gracious, that they said, oh, come in, sit down. And he was in the process of putting his tilak on. I guess he was Ramanujacharya probably, where they have a big V like this and then a red thing down the middle and cross like this. And he had a whole box. It was a wooden box and had different divisions in it just for his tilak. And he was in the middle of doing it when we came there, and he just kept doing it. I was just amazed that it was like a ritual. It was like he was proud of doing this. It was something that he really, felt that this was an important thing. And he had the little red stuff, and then he had a stick, and I was pretty impressed. And so we should also be very impressed. I was just hearing yesterday that many of the men in the ashram are not putting full tilak on their whole body, that they're not learning all these names. But we should learn this. In our ashram, we always have a picture with the different places that you put your tilak, because it's a meditation on different names of Krishna and Vishnu. It helps us to remember. And tilak also helps for non-devotees to remember Krishna. Their soul in there goes, oh, look, there's a Vaishnav. And it helps them to remember. So we should not just see it as a decoration of a dead body, but it's also glorifying Krishna, and we should wear it. One time, there were some people in the kitchen, and Prabhupada went by in L.A. and saw that they didn't have tilak or neck beads, and he sent them out of the kitchen to immediately go make those changes. So Prabhupada said that when one sees one with neck beads and nice bright tilak, then they are looking like they're coming from Vaikuntha. So this is how the devotees should go to the post office and to Publix and things like that. It's nice to dress that way. And people sometimes comment, and then you get a chance to preach. So it's very nice. It's like our uniform. So we should be there ready to preach all the time. So In the second translation, it's describing how Devahuti is being served by many maidservants. But this was because she was getting the results of doing some great austerity, and she was a great lady. We've been hearing so much of her qualities. She was a wonderful daughter, and she was a great wife, very devoted and very austere and submissive to her husband. And she was also, as we will find out, a mother of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and a disciple of the direct disciple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is something that we should see, that she has such great qualities that it makes us look like, well, way down there. So, but she was perfected her renunciation, and therefore she was rewarded. And she here's described that during that austerity, that I guess she didn't take a bath very often, because she's saying, oh, wow, look, I look so nice now. And it discusses about these different baths, which we'll talk about. But she was rewarded this flying palace, everything fully equipped, with everything she needed, along with thousands of maidservants. I don't know if anyone's ever had to go on this Airbnb thing and try to find a place for like a retreat or something, and you're trying to find just the right place. You want it near the beach, you want a pool, you want this, you want that, you want it in a good neighborhood, is it having enough bathrooms, is it having enough beds, is everyone going to be happy with it? It takes so long to find just what you want. But here, poof, there it is, everything you want and more. So we can see that this age, we're with our high technology and everything else, is a little bit disgraceful. But here we see that she's serving with so many luxuries, nicely dressed with silks and all kinds of things like that. And then she goes through enjoying with her husband for many, many years and thinking that, wow, this is pretty nice. Look at all this sense gratification. And then finally she goes, this has been a waste of time. You know, all this stuff, and I'm not any better off than I was before. And she laments, and she says that that this sense gratification really is not the most satisfying thing. So sometimes we get offered, let's say we think we need some reward, we need some time off, and so we try to enjoy in some way, go through the endeavor of finding a place to go off and enjoy whatever. But you should be careful, and you should heed this Devahuti's lamentation and see that, is it really worth it? Am I really going to enjoy after all this endeavor, money spent? Maybe I should just stay and serve the Supreme Lord and not waste so much time trying to enjoy in this world. When I was in Portland, Oregon, just when we left, there was a popular yogi came into the scene there. His name was Rajneesh. And he had, he had a lot of followers for his yoga. And he had his Rolls Royces, and he had his ladies and everything else. And his philosophy was very popular, because it was, you want sense gratification? Oh no, you should be detached. But the way to do it is you just pour it on. You just enjoy and you enjoy and just keep and putting it on and enjoy it every way. And after a while, you get tired of it, and then you'll just give it up. But that's not what the Shastras say, and that's not what Prabhupada said. It says that actually that's like pouring oil or gasoline on a fire, and it's only going to increase it. So we realize here that this process for devotees, we need some purification, we need some austerity, as Devahuti went through. We need to become purified and beg for that taste of bhakti, so that we can actually, within our hearts, understand that we're simply a servant of Krishna, and by satisfying him, we will really enjoy, we will be satisfied totally. and then we'll develop gradually a relationship with Krishna, and this will overtake those cravings for so-called sense enjoyment, where we leave Krishna out of the picture. But having Krishna in the picture is the only way we really can enjoy. Devahuti, she earned her stripes. She did her austerity. And actually, this austerity of not bathing, I think I would have been out of the picture. I don't think I would have been able to, I would have dropped out a long time ago in the running. But she actually did all these different things which were considered very difficult to do, especially for a lady. But we hear of her glories thousands of years later. We're reading about this lady who did so much austerity. But you know what? Right in our own midst, right even in this room, right in our community, there are ladies that have performed such austerity. I can think of quite a few that I have so much honor and respect for, because they are not only mothers, wives, but they're working ladies. They go out now and they go work for hours and hours to help pay, you know, bills and things like that. And they raise many children, and they come and do pujari service. They sneak in somehow or other, and besides their sadhana and chanting their rounds, they come and they go to work, and then they do some pujari service, they dress the deities, and then when there's an opportunity, they go out and preach. So, I mean, this is, you know, a glorious thing that these ladies are doing. And they're joyfully doing this service. And sometimes they even have time to make things for the deities, and I don't know how they do it. Anyway, it's these are unknown soldiers that really should be recognized and taken as worth following in their footsteps. So in this chapter, it mentions different standards from different scriptures of things that especially ladies would be expected to do. Some of them were actually not mentioned by the lecturers because some of these standards go against our grain here in the Western world. Just like I know that it was completely pushed aside one day when it was discussing if you take another man in front of your husband, in front of your kids, that you're considered an enemy. That wasn't discussed. It was put aside because divorce is so, you know, just it's a different standard these days. And then I know for myself, putting oil on my hair, that rubs me the wrong way, you know. I mean, a long time ago, there used to be as a Prabhupada disciple, we'll probably remember a time in the old days when the men would put a lot of oil in their hair. It was called a little dab will do you, you know, Brill cream. I don't know if anyone remembers that advertisement. Just a little dab will do you. And so now it's not looked on very nicely. And then, of course, the equality of women was mentioned, and the inequality in different regards, and that kind of rubs people the wrong way, and it wasn't mentioned very much. But these are standards that we don't sit well with us, but Prabhupada, he liked us to follow his standards that he set. For us, he expected us to follow them. Some of them were maybe a little lower than we find in India, where women don't go on the altar and things like that. But we follow what Prabhupada has said, and we are very happy with that and don't question it. So now we find that now that Prabhupada has left and many of the Prabhupada's disciples are leaving, that some of the standards have even gotten less. And this was Prabhupada's great worry at the time of his death, that the standards wouldn't fall. And so we should be very careful. I know it's very disturbing to me when I see people don't accept the standards that I was raised with. And so we should do our best to keep our standard up. There's some reflections on that I can think of throughout my Krishna consciousness that I've heard about hair in Krishna consciousness. This is describing a lot about how this bath that she took was included washing her hair, which was, I guess, not accepted as necessary. Here it says it was because it was considered you might get a cold or something like that. But for us, I know that washing the hair is essential when you go on the altar. For ladies, I never go on the altar and take care of the deeds unless my hair is washed. So this is an important thing that we have this standard of cleanliness in the pujari room. I was with Jamuna, the cookbook Jamuna, one time helping install her deities in Oregon, and she told me a story directly when she first met Prabhupada, and she was asked to help cook a wedding feast for her sister. And she really didn't know Prabhupada at all, but she agreed to go and help him in this apartment. And she came in and she said that she was, you know, he said, okay, do this or do that and wash your hands. And then she would touch her hair and he'd go wash your hands. And then she'd be doing something else. She'd touch her face, go wash your hands. And so Prabhupada was, from the very beginning, keeping this standard of cleanliness beyond what we could ever understand. You know, well, I just touch my, you know, body, what's the problem, you know? But this was, she told me that this was something that Prabhupada taught her in the very beginning. And of course, we hear the story of liquid beauty. I have my own liquid beauty story. I ran a teenage girl's ashram for 26 years. I lived with 16 teenage girls, and they all had long hair, beautiful hair that they thought was fantastic, of course. All women love their hair. And they would brush it, you know, be in the bathroom for way longer than probably this, what Byasasuno calculated. But anyway, they would be brushing their hair, and every once in a while they'd come running to me, the maintenance man, and say, this is all stopped up. Why isn't the sink flowing? So one day I got a bucket, and I took apart the pipe, and out came this, looked like a mouse with a long tail. It's a big clump of hair, and I stuck it on a hanger. And I went around to all the girls in the ashram. I said, this is your lovely hair. Isn't it beautiful? Oh, you're so beautiful that you're taking such care. And they were all like, oh, you know, completely grossed out. I thought it was the funniest thing. Anyway, so they had some realization that their hair isn't the most gorgeous thing. And when I was in the kitchen in Los Angeles, and the servant would be cooking for Prabhupada, who was on the other side of the temple room, he would come in every once in a while and say, cover your head, cover your head. We didn't have hair nets in those days. And they, you know, I'd be cooking in there, I'd try to keep my head covered and everything, you know, and then he'd come in and go, cover your head, you know, and didn't want anything, you know, contaminated for Srila Prabhupada. So this was a standard we have, and which is nicely done here. Janaka has hair nets for all the ladies, and he's very strict. If you're going to even cut up the subjects, he says you have to put one on. So this is nice. Srila Prabhupada also asked the men to shave their heads every 2 weeks, I believe. And that's a nice thing, keeps it clean. In Gurukula, he had the little boys shave up. And I think one time he was talking about the Shika. Why would they leave the Shika? And Prabhupada took one little boy's Shika and pulled on it and said, this is so the teachers can, when they're bad, they can pull on it. So that was cute. And Prabhupada liked it when we covered our heads. The ladies covered their heads. And most of Prabhupada's disciples still do that out of respect for his desire and pleasure. And other religions, very common. The Mennonites, the Amish, they wear these little bonnets. The men usually wear a hat. In the Jewish tradition also, they have a little thing on their head. And the ladies, during certain ceremonies, they cover their heads. The nuns, they have that habit. Very, you know, they shave their head and put the habit on. The Muslims, they have what's it called? Yeah, that thing. And then they have, right. And then Roman Catholics, they have veils that they put on during Mass. So it's a very common thing in most religions. And this is because it helps to change the focus from, you know, the material body and material things to spiritual things. It can be a distraction. That's why, you know, covering your head is a service to the gentleman, because then they are not agitated seeing all the beauty of the woman and everything like that. So it's a nice service that's was common in the Hindu tradition also. It's a little tough. I mean, we like to, you know, hang loose and everything, but we accept it, and a little displeasure in ourselves is all right. It's good for us. As far as this full bath thing, I think most of us wash our hair regularly. We don't just wait for a special day. But this was something that Devahuti was allowed to do. And of course, in the many predictions in the Shastra about in this age of Kali Yuga, as it progresses, that the men would become very attached to long hair. And these Prabhupada would see that when a disciple would leave and come back with long hair, he would say, these are hippie seeds. You know, that the men actually, it describes in the scripture that the men in Kali Yuga will think that their hair is beautiful when it's long. So this is something that Prabhupada liked when the men shaved up. Even the pastime of Balaram and Rukmi, when Rukmini was asking Krishna, please don't kill my brother, Balaram said, I'll do him in, and he made him look funny with cutting his hair every which way, I guess. So the men also were very attached then to their hair, because he was so embarrassed, he didn't go back to his village. And then there was Pundarik Vijayaniti. He had oiled hair. Imagine it was styled very nicely. So this was a sign that, you know, men were attached to their hair, although Gadadhar soon found that he was not an attached person at all. But this was also a stylish, opulent thing in those days. And then you get older and your hair turns gray. Now, this is a big hurdle for especially ladies to overcome. And of course, the men, they've got that salt and pepper on their chin that they maybe are conscious of, upset about, I don't know. But after you let it go, you realize that life goes on, even if you have gray hair, and you can continue on. And when I was in the program of doing preaching at the jail, I would go around to the different pods where the ladies were, and all they had all day, the whole day, they would just do each other's hair. You know, they had nothing else better to do, which is really kind of a sad situation. So many women spend hours in the salon, and so expensive. My mother used to go regularly, and even then it was expensive. I can't imagine what it is now. But I was in her rest home one time, and I overheard someone saying that there was a lady in anxiety, and it was recommended to get rid of the anxiety, go let her get her hair done. So this is how attached women are, that they're completely controlled by their hair. So it's good to realize that we should accept different things that we can become detached from. And Prabhupada said about the men, he said that if you can't shave your head, if you absolutely cannot shave your head, then at least keep it short. Prabhupada once came into the temple and saw a woman in probably someone who was widowed in their temple, and he commented, see, this lady is wearing white. She has cut her hair short. She's living alone in the temple. This is bhakti. This is detachment, and this is the perfection of her life. So we can see that this bhakti process is to get rid of these attachments and become attached to Krishna. So we should accept what's favorable and reject what's unfavorable. So in this lifetime and in Krishna consciousness, we can kind of analyze what austerities and vows do I want to take for myself. And then we should keep them very firmly and realize that that is where our advancement will come from. And of course, we definitely take vows at initiation, which we can never break. But there's other ones too, like fasting or doing things like this, that we should accept and realize that this is for our purification. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings in his songs that whatever anxiety I get from devotional service, I should consider as my joy, as my pleasure. And that as much attachment as I have for material things, I want for Krishna. So these are prayers that we should take to heart. Someone handed me a little picture this morning before Mangalartik of Haridas Thakur and Lord Chaitanya at the time of his departure, or maybe a few days before, and Lord Chaitanya was picking up Haridas Thakur's head and probably glorifying him. Why? Because Haridas Thakur, even at his very end, he was asked by Lord Chaitanya, well, how is it going? What's going on? He goes, everything is okay, except I can't keep my vow of chanting my rounds. This is my lamentation. This is my greatest anxiety. So this is how a wonderful example and inspiration that how we should keep these vows. Because it is said that austerity is the wealth of the Brahmins, that it's this lifetime is meant for some austerity, and it's good for us. It's purifying. And ultimately, we'll relish a relationship with Krishna, which is definitely the greatest reward. And as far as Krishna's hair, his name is Keshava, which means the one with long, beautiful hair. I have a kind of a little funny story. Keshava Prabhu over here, he's right here. Maybe he doesn't remember, but we opened up the preaching at the prison in Rayford. And so we went there for the first time, and we had a few people come to the program. And so we introduced ourselves. I said, I'm Alkuti Dasi. I said what Dasi meant and everything. And I said, this is Keshava, the one with the beautiful, long black hair. And of course, he shaved up, you know. And they started laughing and said, what? This is Keshava? He doesn't even have any. I said, this is Keshava Das, that he's a servant of the one with the beautiful long hair. So they like that. So Lord Chaitanya also, he was known for his beauty, conquering the world with his weapon of beauty. And it was his long, beautiful hair that Sachimata always was proud of. And Lord Chaitanya, though, then when he became the renounced order, he shaved his head. And one time on the parikrama of Navadvipa, with the girls, we were asked to do a spontaneous play. It was at the place, I don't know the name of the place, can't remember, where Lord Chaitanya took sannyas and shaved his head. And so we got together this play real fast, and I was the man who had to shave Lord Chaitanya's hair. And it's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita how he was crying, and he just was painful, he just couldn't do it. And afterwards, when he finally finished it, he said, I'm never going to shave a head again. And he never did. He never became a barber, and he became a sweet maker. So this was quite a wonderful thing that Lord Chaitanya had this beautiful hair, but he renounced it also just to show. And in Portland, when I was, we installed our deities. It was Gorni Thai. They were their paper mache deities. This was a long time ago. And we sent a picture to Prabhupada of the deities, and he sent back a note, and he said, everything looks nice, but their hair is too long, because it was down to their waist. It was the only wigs we could find. Anyway, it was down to their waist, and he says, it should be half the size, half the length. He says, they are not hippies. So this was the only instruction I really got directly from Srila Prabhupada. So of course we made that adjustment. So these are some things that I can think of that are trying to discuss a little bit of what is in this one purport. So maybe someone else has some little reflections or questions. If not, then we can go about our service to Srila Prabhupada and pray to become more attached to Krishna than to our lump of hair on the top of our head. Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.